Network proudly presents The Jay Slade Show with your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring a galaxy of the golf and sports world's greatest names as a special guest. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay Clemmer.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, for bringing us into 2017 in style. He is absolutely right. I am Jay Flump, and you are listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network. Jay's Plays, as always, is brought to you by JB's Best Hot Sauce, made by a golf writer. It is the most delicious, the spiciest, the boldest, the best tasting hot sauce out there. It's on every table in the Deep South, and it should be on yours. When it says JB's, it's the best. Well, welcome to a new year, everybody. It's going to be an exciting year in golf. We're going to see one brand spanking new major championship venue in Erin Hills. We're going to see a tour venue become a major championship venue when we go to the PGA Championship in North Carolina at Quail. And in between that, we're going to have an excellent Open Championship at Royal Birkdale. It'll be a great Masters, as always. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of surprises. We can talk a lot about Justin Thomas and his 59s. But right now, we're going to switch to golf course architecture right out of the gate. Our next guest has developed over a dozen golf courses all over the country, and each one of them has just been an improvement upon the other, getting better and better and stronger and stronger. And right now, his magnum opus to date is winning all sorts of awards. And a funny thing happened when I called to ask him about the design of this golf course. We talked more and more interestingly about the construction of it. Of course, I'm speaking about Bayonne Golf Club and its developer, Eric Birdstall. Eric, welcome to the Jay's Play Show.
Hi, Jay. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm so glad to have you. Bayonne is a wonderful story, but even more so is the story of Empire Golf, because so many of your courses are public courses as well, and your beginnings in golf were at a public golf course. So why don't you take a couple of minutes and walk our listeners through how you came to be a golf course developer, starting with, you know, your first memories of playing the game.
Wow, that's an interesting question. I mean, my background was, a sporting background, but basketball was my sport. I wasn't really focused on golf until I got into my 30s, but grew up playing basketball. I was a development family, home building and real estate development. So that was my background. Got very interested in golf, in my 30s, and wanted to kind of play and grow with the game, and but I guess it was more like it was kind of fulfilling the background of my work experience. So and then it just kind of hit me once. There was a property that was near where I was located, and I said, boy, this didn't make a great golf course. So a lot of naysayers, people out there that were, kind of saying, you know, you're crazy. What are you going to do? Why are you going to build a golf course? And my nature is, let's go for it. You live your life once, and you try to make the most out of it. So I took the chance, got involved. It was a complicated transaction to tie down this property, but I was able to assemble it. It was a couple of parcels, enough to do a golf course on, and went through the motions of it. And I can tell you that when you come out of the box, you want to do this, and I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that have developed golf courses, had the urge. I made every mistake you can make. There was nothing that was easy, nothing that really was experience with, and so I made a lot of errors on it.
What were some of those mistakes?
Well, I think it was built and developed during the real downturn, financial downturn that we had between 1980, it was like 88 to 94. I mean, it was a really very difficult time. So I got started right in that tough time. I thought the market was really strong, and it was pretty strong, but it was a very tough economy. So the ability to go finance and go and chase down funds to go build a new golf course on a clubhouse was not easy. And this property was in the metropolitan area, so land costs are expensive, development costs are expensive. It was a hard road. And then I kind of went out and, took recommendations from people who were in the business, but I never got, really into all the nuances, all the things. So it was kind of a learning curve right out of the box. So including, how to manage it, how to market it from a sales point, certainly development, things that I would have done in the construction side that I didn't do during the golf course that I had to go back and redo. For example, when I shaped the golf course, finished it, it would have been smarter for me to sod the fairways and roughs and plant it. What I did was I seeded the fairways, I seeded the roughs, and it was one of the rainiest years we had. So, I probably spent double in the grassing, just, ripping out when seed contaminated from other seeds. It was just, simple little things like that you learn as you go through and you make, you make your mistakes, but those are good things in a way. So.
Now, let's back up a step, because you said something absolutely fascinating, which was that it seems something that you're very good at. It's going out and getting financing. So how does one go about getting financing to build a golf course?
Well, back back when I started, this was the late 80s, early 90s, the National Golf Foundation, which kind of was guiding the golf world as far as the demographics of golf. You know, we had 25 million participants, active golfers in the country. So it was a significant number of people. The Golf Foundation kind of put out their studies. They do studies for you, show your demographics. And any golf developer would probably use the National Golf Foundation to show a lender. And the lender would see that, oh, wow, here's the population, here's the people, this is the number of golf, and here's the lack of supply. So for, the late 80s, early part of the 90s, good portion of the 90s, there was a call to build 500 new golf courses a year. 500, which is a lot of golf courses. And during the, a lot of the 90s, there was 500 golf courses built a year. There was a tremendous amount of new golf created. And then it kind of got in after the millennium. That kind of changed. And we didn't see a change, but it was actually changing earlier than 2000. And then obviously we hit 2007, 2008, and the whole golf world contracted and repositioned. So it was an interesting time. You got to be on top of it. But lenders that wanted to participate in golf, and there were many. There was lots of money that wanted to get placed. And so, credible people that had the ability to produce these things were able to get financing and do them.
Now, you've been so successful over a dozen times in your career. For those that aren't familiar with some of your courses, why don't you take us very quickly through, I'm probably going to butcher the pronunciation, Minisiago, which was your first course, up into through we get to Bayonne. And I may chime in because a couple of my favorites are courses that you designed. So bring everybody up to date on your sort of curriculum vitae of courses.
Well, I started, as I was saying, Minisiago was my first. It was my first, trek out into, golf development. Didn't do a lot of design mine, but I was learning. I hired Roy Case, who was lived in Florida, but was a British, a British architect. So his background is British golf and British design. So I hit it off with Roy, and I asked Roy to come and design the golf course, for me. So, went through it, and again, all the different issues that I explained as far as everything you could do wrong. I did. That's the nature of a lot of things. But making those mistakes really propelled me to go further. And I said, I'm not going to do this again. I can do this a lot better. I can do this better if I take a more active role, if I do more of the things myself. And so, in the few later on, I was doing all aspects of golf, not just the, development part of it, but I was buying the real estate, going through approval process, going through, building the golf course myself, designing the golf course, going through all the financial aspects, marketing the golf course and managing the golf course. So I kind of felt I could, I could improve on all the things that, went wrong earlier. So, after Minnesiango, I was called to become a development partner in the construction of Hudson National, which I believe now
sure.
is
famous Tom Fazio design down in the Hudson Valley.
Tom Fazio, right in Westchester County. It was a very, very tough property to work on. A lot of rock, a lot of blasting, it was a great learning experience. I've come very hard to find a quality group of designers like Tom. I mean, just the people that he has, and he's a first class human being, and so I've learned a lot from Tom. I enjoyed that, and it got me excited to keep going. So things that I didn't really know when I did Minnesiango, I learned by mistakes. I saw in becoming a developer and building, and I did the construction at Hudson National. So we took that, and I went to develop New Jersey National. That is in right outside of Far Hills in Bernardsville, Bedminster, Pluckerman area, right in New Jersey. So that was a little different kind of project. I bought the real estate, and it's a course that I did pretty much the design myself on it. It was a residential project in the Hills development, and so it's a course that we still own today. It was one of the courses that when I opened golf, I started what I would call public golf, private club for a day, and that was one of the clubs that was a private club for a day. And in the early mid-90s, people were very anxious to play golf, couldn't get on private clubs, but you wanted to give
sure.
them high
so
quality
they,
experience. Yeah.
Yes, they loved to be able to feel like they were playing for a country club, at a country club, and a lot of your designs do that. Pine Hill being one of my favorites, also Pine right. Barrens. Helped to raise the quality of public golf by raising what the average and ardent golfer would accept as being, the middle ground. So the bar definitely has been raised, partly by Empire Golf and the way in which you both design and run the business.
Well, we tried, to create a program where we called it Club Max. So, also, if you join a club, because we had membership and public courses, but you get access to all the courses. So we were trying to, we were aggressively going out, creating and building clubs. but also trying to create, you know, value for people. So, the best thing in the world is to have an interesting, challenging golf course, something that you play every day, that plays differently, that feels differently, that keeps you interested in coming back. The next best thing is having a bunch of golf courses that you're really a member of and you can bounce around and join and participate. And so that's what we did with the Club Max program. So, you know, like you said, I went from New Jersey National to Pine Barrens, which is in Jackson. I developed a course, Pine Hill. I did a place that I called Branton Woods in East Fishkill, which was a beautiful, great property. I developed a course called Madison Green in Florida, a course called Twisted Dunes in outside of Atlantic City, Sure,
Twisted Dunes, yep, outside Atlantic City, an outstanding Irish links, and also public. So, by the way, everybody, we're talking with Eric Bergstahl of Empire Golf, the man behind all over a dozen courses, all of the Eastern Seaboard and the rest of the country, many of which are public. So before we go to break on the Jay's Place Show on the Golf News Net Radio Network, very quickly just tell us a little bit about Pine Hill, Pine Barrens, and Twisted Dunes, since they're all public and everybody listening to the show can go and play them.
Yeah. Well, right. No, Pine Barrens is a private club. It was open and we did convert that to a membership club. Pine Hill was also converted to a membership club. So Twisted Dune, though, is a public golf course, has been and will, and it's a wonderful, wonderful property in Egg Harbor Township. We moved about 3 million yards of dirt there, tried to create something very interesting. All three of those properties were built in a sand-based soil. So all sand, southern Jersey is loaded with sand pockets. So Pine Barrens, a generally flat piece of property that we moved, probably 2 million yards of dirt to make that. 3 million at Twisted. Pine Hill was different. Pine Hill is on the east side of the same ridge that Pine Valley is, so it's a neighbor, and it's on the west side, and it has views of Philadelphia, but the elevations are 160 feet of elevation at Pine Hill. So those elevations go up to 210 feet, which where the clubhouse was built, and that elevation is now probably the highest point in southern Jersey. That club has been sold and is now in the Trump portfolio. So they operated as Trump National Philadelphia.
Everybody, we're talking with Eric Bergstahl of Empire Golf. We're going to be right back after this. You are listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.